Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Say What Author Spotlights, a division of Say What Book Club. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane, and each month we bring you the featured author of the book we're currently reading. Today's guest is author Luna Charles, and we'll be discussing her novel, My Rules, My Life. Luna, welcome to the show. Luna? Luna, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Okay. Well, thanks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I think
I'm
got the title of your
mess.
Book wrong, didn't I?
Yeah, okay,
is it My Rules, My Life, or My Life, My Rule? Got it.
My
okay.
Life,
yeah,
my
I transpose it all the time.
You know, it's what you want from your life. That's the rules you make from it.
Gotcha. Apologize for that. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump on in. Have you always been a writer? Tell us about your writing journey.
I always been a writer? I think everybody's a writer, whether you're like blogging or journaling or something. If you're putting, or at least I've been told, if you're putting pen to paper and writing down your thought process, you're a writer. The only difference between me and everybody else is, I guess, I had the balls to believe that I could actually put it into a novel and put it in front of people's faces and tell them, hey, this is worth reading. It might do something for your life. It might entertain you or educate you or help you in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, so having the gift of writing is one thing, but becoming an author is quite a different feat. So have you always wanted to be an author?
I think I always did, but I didn't really believe that I could. In the sense that, like, I've been a reader of Tolkien, Pierce, Koons, King, like, so many great authors, and there was nobody that was really in my genre that was really, that I could look up to and be like, hey, it's somebody that I'm Haitian, so I'd be like, hey, there's a Haitian best-selling author. There was nobody there, so I was, like, in my 8th or 9th grade, and Edwidge Dontika came out with Breath, Eyes, and Memories. And then I was like, yo, she's Haitian. And, you know, everybody was reading her, and she was on Oprah's book club, and I was like, oh, so somebody like me could realistically write something and become so great. I'm not saying I'm any in the same level as Edwidge Dontika, of course. But it was the first time that I realized that, hey, it's not just this type of person that could become an author, but it was open to everybody else. And then once you tell me I can do something, nobody else can tell me I can't, because I'm stubborn like that.
That's right. Okay. Well, that stubbornness is paying off. Why don't you tell us about your novel, My Life, My Rules?
My Life, My Rules is basically, it follows Celine. This is the second novel that I wrote about Celine, and this time she has her life together. And, you know, she has a family, she has the friends, she has the finances and everything. And she faces a very difficult situation that many, many, many people in America face, and that's the fact when it comes to immigration. Unfortunately, in America, it's not the way it used to be, where, okay, we're open-armed to immigrants coming here and making a better life for themselves. There are many things that they have to go through, and now that she's going to have to go through it because of the past situations that she's faced, and she is facing that situation with the best way she knows how, by equipping herself mentally and emotionally with, you know, the energy that she's come to possess when it comes to this is me, this is what I'm doing, and, you know, hell or high water, I'm going to get this done type of situation.
Okay.
And that's what she's going to.
Okay. All right. Now, are you prepared to read an excerpt for us?
Yeah, definitely. No problem. No,
okay.
I can't.
We'll go right ahead.
That's a complete lie. It's a complete lie. I was going through the book like, oh my gosh, what should I read? I don't know what to read. Oh, stop. Okay, so it's funny, as a writer, you spend so much time writing the book, and then they're like, oh, you got to write a summary and an excerpt, and you're like, They said, writing the book enough? Like, do you know what I went through? Like, I think you're like running and writing a summary and excerpt is like the worst thing you could do to a writer. Like, dude, I just wrote like a whole book.
Uh-huh.
Like, give me a break. But yeah, I pulled this out through the pages. I hope everybody likes that.
Okay.
This is after Zaline has just gotten the news that she was applying for his citizenship. That didn't work out because, you know, she got her stuff together and everything, but your past does come back to haunt you. And, you know, she got in a bit of trouble earlier. She is a felon. And, you know, when you have a felony in the United States, it's like more than unlike that you will be able to get your citizenship. So this is her finding out that that has happened for her. But I interrupted my voice cracking on the verge of tears. I'm a successful businesswoman now, married with a daughter, and just bought my first house. The lawyer, that's great. But if I were you, I would not try to fight this. It's a miracle that they haven't tried to deport you. I haven't tried to leave the country for any reason because they might detain you on the way back and you'd be sent straight to Guantanamo. Mrs. Rivera, I wish I'd had better news for you, but the fact is I can't help you. Her face teared up. It compressed. She couldn't take it. I wanted to plead with her, beg her, yell at her. There must be something she could do. Damn it. Everything that I had accomplished could not be in jeopardy for the sake that I had made a mistake, hung out with the wrong person, been friends with the wrong people more than a half a decade ago. But I knew there was no pleading with her. My eyes welled up with tears. It spilled over my face. My hands shook. The phone. My world was falling apart before my eyes. I regained just enough composure to thank her and hang up the phone. I slammed the laptop shut and erupted in sobs. I tried as hard as I could not to sob too loudly. Though our walls were thick, I didn't want Daniel to hear me right now. This was a disaster. We had talked so much about traveling, going to Haiti for a few weeks, then maybe the Virgin Islands later in the year, now this. I felt like I was trapped, like the night my grandmother had hid me in the neighbor's cabinet for the Tonto Maku had come searching my mother's house when she was 4 months pregnant. They took her. They beat her. They made her tell them where her husband was, but she didn't know. I cried harder. I was trapped in between the four walls of the United States. I started hyperventilating. My fears of persecution rising inside of me. I stood to run, but the office walls, they closed in on me. I couldn't breathe. Everything went black. My last thought was, the last night dream seems so ominous right now.
Yes. That was, that was Mona Charles reading an excerpt from My Life, My Rules. It's a really great book. So if you guys haven't read it, you should pick that one up and put that one on your must-read list. So, Luna, what did you hope to accomplish by writing this story?
My number one issue, my number one when I write any story, no matter what it is that I want somebody to have been through that situation and realize that they're not the only person that's been through it that there's always another way. Like, I want people not to only be entertained, but only find some kind of hope from my stories. I guess I don't write like everybody else, or I try not to write like everybody else, although my stories are fiction. They're very based on what's going on right now, because there are families being torn apart by immigration policies every single day, and they're being torn apart by people that don't even know what the struggle is to be an immigrant, to come to the United States, to work your butt off, to make a life for yourself, and just, oh, well, you're not American, you can't go. But the United States was based off, like, people not being Americans coming here. And,
that's true.
You know, dealing with the mm-hmm. situations that Celine has dealt with, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you feel, based on the feedback that you get from your readers, that you have met your goal? Do you feel like people are getting that sense of hope?
I really do. Like, it's good. I, as a writer, I don't know if it's just me or some lot of writers, sometimes you write, and when you write, you put a piece of your soul into it. It's a part of you. It really is. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I don't know if everybody feels like that as writers, but it's like a child, you know? You're mm-hmm. giving birth to mm-hmm. a child, and then you put it into the earth, and then people get to say whatever they want from it. And you put it out there. You hope it's doing good. You don't know what's going on. The sales are not where you want it to be. But then mm-hmm. ever so often you get somebody, and I get this all the time, not all the time, but often enough that mm-hmm. it's somebody, it's not a black, white, it might be a Russian person, it might be somebody mm-hmm. that comes up to me and was like, I read your book, and oh my God, mm-hmm. you don't understand how much it spoke to me, and what you were saying, and then this chapter, and this, what you said, and like, oh my God, it was just, it was great, and I go into my car, personally, I go into my car and I just cry because it's mm-hmm. like, wow, you know, you don't know who or how your word is going to affect somebody. And it's just, it's brilliant. It's just, it's worth it. Mm. It's worth all the time and effort and aggravation and doubt and overcoming it and everything when you touch one person because, you know, mm-hmm. that one person is going to go out and they're going to touch somebody else because you don't know how that those words moved through the universe and came back because everything comes mm-hmm. back. So, yeah.
That's right. That's awesome. So what genre do you currently write in?
I would say the genre is women's literature. But right now, the next series that I'm working on is more women's literature and kind of, I would say, sci-fi, because it has, like, magic and involved in it. Because I wanted to put more of, you know, what I grew up in Haiti about, and it was, like, it was my mom protecting me, not my mom, but my grandmother protecting me from, like, everything that was around me. And a big part of Haitian culture is voodoo. Whether you want you're part of it or not, is like protecting your kids from the people that practice it kind of thing. So I'm putting that more into my genre and stuff. So we will see how that works out.
Okay, so you're doing kind of women's fiction and then women's fiction slash some sci-fi kind of stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
And are there any other genres that you'd like to try?
No, I don't know yet. I never know. I never know. I was a big fan of sci-fi and fantasy growing up. That's all I read. Mm-hmm. And when I sat down to actually put a book together, I figured that's what would have came out, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to my writing, it's not what it's, I plan it and God laughs type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, you want this, but this is what you're going to write. So.
Yes.
So it's like,
how many books have you written so far?
So far, three, and I'm working on my next four. So, yeah.
Okay, so why don't you tell us the titles and a little bit about each one of the books that you've written then? Because I've only read My Life, My Role.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my first book was Men Are Not the Problem. It was it was the book that got a lot of women into, like, questioning me. And my only purpose was my I wrote that book, and it took me 5 years to write that book. And it was basically, like, I came to an understanding that I wrote it off of the situations that I had been on. And it was, it wasn't, I came to an understanding that the situations that I was in had nothing to do with anybody else. Like, I had to learn to take responsibility for my life. And
absolutely,
I'm not saying that for anybody else, but personally, I learned that my relationship problems were completely dependent on me, because I could have chosen to walk away from those situations at any given time.
At any given time,
I could have walked away from those guys, those situations, those places, and I chose to be there. And a lot of people get angry at me because I'm like, men are not the problem. They're like, oh, then who's the problem? And I'm like, well, if something is routinely hurting you, routinely, over and over and over again, hurting you, and you're still in the situation, you got to learn to take responsibility for your actions. Okay?
That's right.
Because, yeah, they're hurting you, but you're allowing them to do it. Okay?
That's right.
A lot of people were angry. I was too young to know anything about that, or some people said, and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, is that I learned to take responsibility for myself. And I really, when I said it's not you, it's me, like I meant it. Like, because you know what? At the end of the day, I allowed you to stay there, to be in my life, to do these things to me, because at any given day, I could have been like, you know what? You've cheated on me how many times? And I've taken you back. So,
that's right.
That's like, at the end of the day, I allowed this to happen. I gave you permission to treat me like crap. And I had to get up, you know, get myself going and take care of it. And that was the process behind that first book. My second book.
Now, is it fiction? Was that book fiction or was it nonfiction?
It is fiction because it's a story wrapped around my different things that happened in life.
Okay.
So I took a lot of literary processes through that. Like, I took a lot of openness to it, that it was not all, like, real. So I can say nonfiction. It was, like, it was fiction to a larger point than it was nonfiction. My second book, Live Life, it was a self-help book, and the only reason I wrote that, and I can say the only reason I loved writing that book, it only took me like 6 months to write, and the reason I wrote it was because at the time when I was writing Men Are Not the Problem, I just became a mother, me and my husband just bought our first house, and we had a lot going on. We had a ton going on, and my friends, like close friends of mine that were like single and didn't have kids and, you know, didn't have as much I was going through, were like, oh, well, you have more time than me. And I'm like, we all have 24 hours in a day. I promise you, I'm not a vampire. Like, and they were like astounded by what I was accomplishing, and they were not. And I was like, you know, it's just basically putting down what you want, figuring it out, going constantly towards it, and not letting anybody deter you. Like, you might have time to watch reality TV or whatever shows that you're watching. At the same time, I might have that same reality TV in the background, but I have something that I'm working on the computer. Like, I'm constantly doing something that's building my future. And I'm always constantly thinking about my mom and what she gave up for me to have a better future. So I'm giving up, like, these things. Like, I don't want to misquote any reality TV because somebody might hurt me. But I have something that I'm constantly doing that I want to do, because I have two small daughters. Today is my daughter's birthday. Happy birthday, Maya. She's six.
Happy birthday.
But I'm always doing something, and I wrote that for the specific purpose that I took what was happening in my life and I wrapped it around it. It's like, this is what I want to do, and everything else is going to go around what I want to do. And I don't want to have anybody telling me that I can't do it because of the time frame or anything like that. So I wrote that book, and it was just targeted towards one friend who really never read it. Because she was like, I can't do this. I don't have enough time. All of this is happening. And I'm like, I have the same amount of time as you. You know, I have more to do now with my writing career than you do. So you can't tell me you don't have the time to do it. And it was basically the steps and the rules. It's like 22 weeks of just basic steps to do. What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to accomplish it? Need to do to accomplish it type of things that I wrote that helped me out, the books that I read, the things that I did, the way I contacted different people to make it a better life for myself and accomplish my goals. And that was my second book. And then my third book is My Life, My Rules, which obviously you read and you love. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. Okay, so what is the one thing you wish you had known before publishing your books that would have made your journey easier?
If it was one thing that I knew I had, I think it would have been that you can't count on anybody except yourself, which is sucks, but that's like the same thing, and not just books, but anything you're trying to accomplish in life, okay? The people that you expect to support you is not going to be the people that support you, and the people that support you are not going to be the people you expect, you know? You got to have a tough skin. That's one thing I knew. You have to have a tough skin, because I know I've been very, like, sad and depressed and, you know, the first couple of years. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I wrote this book. It took me, like, forever to write it. Oh, my God, read it. And my friends were like, okay. And nobody was there. And, you learn to be a writer, and you learn to be a tough skin. Being a great writer means you get to get a really, really tough skin. And by the time you're getting the recognition that you want for being a great writer, then all the work has been done and everybody has recognized you, and none of them or most of them are not the friends you want, you know? So that's one thing, just learning to have a really, really tough skin.
Okay. So you mentioned that when you were growing up, you liked to read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy and things like that. What types of books do you enjoy reading now?
Now I'm mostly into self-development books. I read a lot of Emerson, and I read, like, John Roth, and just a lot of growing up and being into your own person type of books. I come to the understanding that, like, there's a saying, and it goes like, when you're ready, when the student is ready, the teacher will come. And as I'm growing and trying to help other people grow into themselves, I'm learning that teachers are constant learners. So I have to constantly be growing in order to help people grow, because I can't be stagnant. I'm trying to accomplish in my life and expect to help other people grow as individuals.
Right.
So I'm constantly learning. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly evolving. I do a lot of personal development. I'm learning to travel a lot because of what I'm doing, and it's great. So,
that's awesome. So name three new or indie authors whose works have impressed you.
Obviously, I have to say Edward John Tikal, because she is such a great writer when it comes to the Haitian community, and I had the pleasure of meeting her. NJ Favre is another one.
She
is another Haitian author. She's young. She's beautiful. She has this great spirit and great soul that I completely, completely love about her. And I won't say it's a new author, but definitely somebody that I completely take to heart is an old author, and that's Emerson. Because Emerson has such great personal development that I think everybody should read at least one Emerson book in, like, you know, learn from them. Because I think personal development for anybody that's trying to be on a different pillar of their life is really, really important.
Okay. Now, how has becoming an author changed your life?
It's changed my life that I had to change my last name. So, yeah. Because when I got married, I had this whole thing when I got married that I still went by Charles. My books are still under the name Charles. And my husband is Hardcastle.
Okay.
And we would... We would go to places and conventions and stuff, and I would introduce myself, and people would be like, oh, so you're Mr. Charles. And I would be like, oh, yeah, that's not cool. So, yeah, so I changed my last name. That's one way. And the joy in my daughter's faces when they go to the library and they see one of my books. Like, you can't take that away from me. I don't care what you say. You can't take that away from me. That's brilliant. It's just, oh, mommy, I went to the library and I saw your book. You can't take that from me. I don't care what you say. That's like the joy and the happiness and the fact that I help people. Even if it's like one person a year that reads my book, and it's like, what you said, the way you said it, the way I felt when I read it, that's priceless.
Yes.
You know, it's priceless. Okay. That's like, you can't take that away from me, and I completely and utterly love it.
Okay. So none of us reaches our goals without someone helping us. How do you pay it forward?
I try to help as much people as I can. Like, my books, I hope that I'm helping paying it forward by speaking the truth in my books and putting the story so that people can fit it into their lives and what their happen. And any time that, because I'm a practicing Buddhist, I'm not a Buddhist, I'm practicing to be a Buddhist. Which means that I eat meat and I drink, so I'm not a whole Buddhist, because you can't do that as a Buddhist.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
Yeah. So I'm practicing, which is okay with Buddhism. You can just practice until you're perfect. But just helping people as much as I can. Just like, I like to put in what I preach, if that makes sense. Like, just putting one step in front of the other and helping people, and if they have a question, if they need anything, that I'm there as a helping hand, just as much as I can. Because my mother, as a person, did that, like, absentmindedly. I don't know how many people she took in. She was like, she was like, people take in stray animals. My mom took in stray people. Like, it was weird. We always had people we did not know living in our house that were like, hey, this is your cousin. No, they're not, Mom. You just picked them up, like, and put them into school, and, you know. And I try to help as much as I can, because that,
I think that's,
you know,
such a beautiful
at the end
spirit,
of the day, you know,
I mean, you know, just think how much further we would be, you know, just as a people, as a world, if more people had that kind of, you know, let's just help people, you know, kind of spirit. I just think that's so beautiful.
Yeah, because you know what, at the end of the day, it's not the amount of stuff you have, it's the amount of people that you live in their hearts. Okay.
That's right.
It is my best friend, one of my best friends passed away when she was 28. She has cystic fibrosis. And she'll always live in everybody's heart, because she was about other people. And she was fond of saying this, because I was like, you know, you're going to pass away, because, you know, cystic fibrosis, you don't live long. And she was like, you can go outside and get hit by a bus, and I'll outlive you, so stop feeling sorry for me, and just, you know, live your life to the fullest. Okay, stop making excuses to live your life and just live your life. And it's all about helping people and your priorities. And that's what
I try to do.
I hope I do, but yeah.
That is so beautiful. I love that sentiment, you know. And even the fact that you have the heart to want to help, you know,
you're making even a world of difference even right there. You know, just the desire to want to help. I mean, people just, you know, it's us four and no more, and they don't help anybody, you know. But here you have a desire to, and you have grown up in the environment where you've seen it. You know, so I don't think there's any way that you couldn't possibly be making a difference, you know. I just can't do that.
I think there is a difference between wanting to and actually doing it, and that's one of the things that I learned in Temple. It's like you want to do it, but a lot of us want to help, but then we hesitate. We're scared to do it because we're like, oh, how is this person going to react? It's like stop overthinking it and just do it. I remember the first time I jumped out of the car and pulled out an umbrella because an old lady was getting soaked in the rain walking into Winn-Dixie, which is a local supermarket, into the store. And she looked at me weird. I looked at her weird. She was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to help you into the store because you're getting wet. Mm-hmm. And she was like, do you want something? I was like, no, I just want to help you. And she was like, okay. And it was weird. The first time it was like really weird. Like I felt weird. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, why are you being so nice to me? Like type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But afterwards, once I got into the car, I was so moved that the fact that I helped her, but by the fact that I had the balls to actually do it, because some of us want to do something really, really nice, but then we're scared of what will happen. And instead of facing our fears and doing it, we're hesitant to do it. And I think if we just, like, faced our fears and just helped humanity, like, you feel like helping humanity, you have a leftover meal that you're taking home, and you see a homeless person on the side of the street, and you're like, I should give this to the homeless person, and then another side of your mind is like, I don't know. Just do it. Like, you do it, and the feeling, the emotional release that you get in your heart from doing how you feel like it's just so much. It's just so overwhelming that after that, you will never think twice about it, and I think we would be so much better as people if we just followed our heart. Okay, because there is like two people that live inside of you. It's the person that's like, do it, and the person that's like, but if you don't do, like, really, like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. I have this thing in my life that I'm like, why not? Like, anytime I want to do something, I ask myself, why not? Like, what is the worst that could possibly happen if I do this?
That's right.
They might get offended. Okay, they might get offended. Great. But what if they don't? And this is, like, the greatest experience that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I'd rather, like, find out. Yeah.
Oh, I have so many different thoughts running through my mind right now, you know. But I think to go back to one of the points that you made a little earlier when you were saying, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes people want to help and then they don't. But I think even help comes on even just a smaller scale, even something as simple as giving a smile to someone or saying hello. You know, we think those things are small, but to the person who's on the receiving end of it, you know, it could be monumental, you know. And I have a small child. She's almost seven going on, you know, 18. But she had been wanting to do a play date with her best friend, and the little girl had siblings, you know. And but my child, she's an only child, and so this was her friend's first play date without her siblings, and she was so excited. She says, "Oh, I will never forget this day in my whole life," you know. And here, and I thought about that because, you know, you don't really think anything of it. My daughter gets to do this stuff all the time, but for her friend, it was something huge. And for me, it's just, you know, it was just a chance for the girls to get together and you know, go run around and, you know, do some fun stuff. But it was something that meant something so much to her, you know, and such a small thing to do on my end, but something that she'll never forget. And I really believe her because, you know, this is her first time doing anything without her siblings, you know. And it's just little stuff.
And
you know, I just brought all that up.
You never know how the smallest thing that you do, it might be so small to you, but to somebody else, you don't know where they are in their life and what they're on the verge of, you know? When you're in Facebook, the thing about Facebook is you have a lot of Facebook friends that you don't really know what's going on in their life. And then you read these post and these comments, and you see people take their lives every day, and you never know what could have changed that. Like, you
That's
never
right.
know if a smile and be like, hey, you haven't been mm-hmm. feeling well. You wanna go grab lunch with me? Like,
mm-hmm.
what would have
mm-hmm.
just grabbing a sandwich with a person that was feeling bad that day, like, what would have been the outcome of that? Could you have saved somebody's
mm-hmm.
life by just saying, hey, let's go grab lunch together?
That's right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You never know,
right.
like, just
Are
like
there?
You don't pass by somebody
okay.
without saying hi and giving them a smile
mm-hmm.
and good morning, okay?
That's
People
right.
walk past each other
mm-hmm.
all day. Like, we're walking past each other and we're not even saying hello. What happens
right.
to this common humanity? Just
mm-hmm.
common humanity. Hi, how are you doing? I hope you have a good day. Just hoping for somebody to have a good day. You don't know what they're going through inside. That
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
you putting that out there in the universe for them is going to help them.
Yeah.
And I,
you know, I love this
that
passion that you know, it just exudes and just, you know, just it's just coming through the wire so strong. And there's no way to have this passion that you feel for, you know, just for helping and for loving and, you know, and for evolving and all this sort of thing, and not have those that same sentiment flow through in your writing. So, you know, if you are, for those of you who are listening, you know, and getting a glimpse of this interview with author Luna Charles, you know that this same passion that she is speaking with us today, you know, just it's so there in the pages of her books. You're really going to enjoy her writing. So I really encourage you to give her novel, My Life, My Rules, a chance. I really think that you'll be moved by it.
So, is there anything about the industry that you would change if you could?
If there's anything I would change about the industry, personally, I would wish that the books, not me personally, but books in global
mm-hmm.
would be more about uplifting our young
mm-hmm.
brothers and sisters. Was more
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of books coming out, and you know, it's all about what's going on in the immediate environment, and I want more books coming out about what we could do outside of the immediate
yeah.
environment. Okay, that
mm-hmm.
would be my only hope for the industry, because yes, the drug game, there is
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say the word wrong, thought, sorry. But there's, okay, things like this happen, yes. But I want to
yeah.
see more books about young women entrepreneurs. I want to see more,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, queens and kings. It may be more fantasy novels. Maybe we could rewrite
mm-hmm.
the whole history of Egypt in a book, you know. Make it more
mm-hmm.
uplifting. Something that I want my daughters to read that are by black authors. Because there's a lot
yes.
of great books that are not by black authors that I would recommend
mm-hmm.
to my daughters to read. But I would like
mm-hmm.
great books about our past as kings and queens and innovators and,
yes.
you know, the things that are happening that did happen that we conquered and overcame by black authors
mm-hmm.
that I would like, be like, Ayana, read this, Maya, read this, you know, take care
mm-hmm.
of it. Besides just
mm-hmm.
books about, you know, being in the game and the hustle and everything, yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that happening, and I don't want to say anything bad about anybody that write about that, because it's the truism.
Mm-hmm.
That happens.
That's right.
In the community. It happens in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want it to keep happening in the community, and the way you stop stuff from happening in the community is by focusing the attention of the community on something else. Let's write
yeah.
more about the positivity of what can be overcome rather than what is happening and keeping the community in the same mind state. So that's what I would
want. Gotcha. That's really good. That's good. So as you were talking, when we get off, I will send you some information about a person who his book is coming out next week, as a matter of fact, and he writes children's books. I met him here. David Watkins is his name, and I'll send you some information about him. I think he has some books that you might find
yeah.
Good for the girls.
Yeah.
I'll do that once we get off here. If there was one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring author, what would it be?
Right. It's the silliest thing. But I remember when I was first writing my first book, and I have thick skin. My mother has thick skin. She raised me with thick skin. Mm-hmm. We're like part crocodile or something. I don't know. But it's, when somebody tell me I can't do something, that's like basically daring me. Oh, you can't do this. All right, watch me. Just in my mind, like I'm smiling and shaking your hand like, okay. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm saying, watch me. Watch me do this because you said I couldn't. I'm going to do it just so you can see it, bro. I'm just going to do it just so you can see it. And people will say anything. People will read your first draft and hurt your feelings. People will read your synopsis and laugh at you. People will hurt you. But you have to grow like crocodile Dundee type freaking skin and be like, watch me.
Mm-hmm.
If this is what you truly want in life, if this is what you think your calling is, you have to like grow like elephant sized balls and be like, yo, I'm gonna do this, and nobody can take me from it. And let me tell you, people are going to try to deter you. Okay, nobody in life that ever accomplished anything worth accomplishing did it with people shouting from the parade and waving like you can do a sign. By the time people were doing that, all the time and effort that needed to go into it to accomplish it had already been done. Nobody is there when up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. Nobody is there when you're up at 12 o'clock trying to figure out what you want to do. Nobody is there when you like you erase that chapter because you're like, this is crap. What am I going with this? Nobody's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But you have to keep doing it. If you really want it, if this is something you really, really want, you have to have like this unfazable demeanor that, watch me, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Oh, you think, this is not going to happen? Watch me. You think I'm never going to be a writer? Watch me. You think I'm never going to be a bestseller? Watch me. And you can't stop at the first book. If your first book got a bad review, you got to write the second book. You got to write the third book. You got to write the fourth book. You got to keep writing and writing and writing. And whether it takes a year or 20 years, if this is what you want to accomplish, you got to dig your heels into the sand and say, I will not be moved until this gets done because this is what I plan to do and you're going to watch me accomplish it. You're going to get it done.
That's right.
That's the only advice I could get to left writer. Just keep writing. Write and write and write and write and write and write and write until there's nothing to write anymore. So on your deathbed, somebody says that, you know what, she did it. She did it, and nobody can say anything about it.
Wow. I'm loving your energy. I'm loving this passion here. Being a relatively new author, what methods do you have for keeping your works in front of readers?
Just being engaged, talking to people, putting your books out there. You can blog about it, write short stories. I write a lot of free short stories. I write a lot of different things. And just, you know, just finding out what your readers like and talking to them and engaging them. And don't be afraid to give out free copies of your book. Like, seriously.
Okay.
If you're in it to write, first of all, the money will come. If you love it, the money will come. Okay? Write what you love. Give it away. Have people read it. Get feedback for free, you know? Like, the money comes after your love has been appreciated by people. Okay, don't expect to be a bestseller your first time around. It happens, but it's not always. So just engage your readers and take care of what needs to be taken care of. Get it done. Right.
Okay. So tell us some of your interests outside of writing.
I love to eat. I love food. I really do. And it's horrible because I'll watch Anthony Bourdain at like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'll wake up and make oyster Rockefellers because I'm like, doesn't that sound good? Like, who's making oyster Rockefeller at 1 o'clock in the morning? Stop!
Okay. What else?
And it's sad that I have oysters to make oyster Rockefellers at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's like my subconscious mind already planned this. Like, I know you're gonna watch Anthony Bourdain at 1, so let's eat some. Let's buy some oysters, you know, and some spinach, and just have it ready. Because tonight you're gonna want to make oyster Rockefellers. It's crazy. Like, I love to
tonight,
eat. I love trying new and different things, like pig brains and pig ears and chicken brain soup. You're like, oh, she's crazy. What is wrong with her?
No, I'm just like, whatever floats your boat, you know?
It's funny because when I started eating sushi, because my mom is Haitian. Okay, my mom is Haitian, true blue Haitian person. And I started eating sushi, and I remember the first time I brought sashimi home, and, you know, sashimi is just, like, pieces of fish. There's no rice, there's nothing. It's just pieces of fish. And I brought it home, and she found it in the fridge, and she was like, this is lazy. You don't want to cook your fish. You're just being lazy. And she, like, took out a pad and tried to cook my sashimi, and I was like, Mom, that's how you eat it. And she's like, no. They are just lazy over there. Give me some lemon and salt. But I was like, no.
That is hilarious.
I thought that's not what they eat.
Oh, goodness.
I was lazy, but she cooked my sashimi. And I was just like, yeah, my mom is not eating sashimi. Like, not doing it.
Oh, okay.
No offense to any of my Japanese people. I'm just saying that's how my mom rolls.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. It's okay. So tell us, when can we what can we expect from you next, and when is it scheduled to release?
Well, definitely you're going to get a lot of more stuff dealing with metaphysics. Because I put in a lot of metaphysics into my books, talking about when it comes to, like, the law of attraction. I try to put a lot of laws of attraction and stuff into my books because I really believe what you believe, what you think, what you constantly keep in your mind is what you put into your universe, is what brings into your universe and what the type of people you attract. If anybody thinks it's foolish, I want them to go 5 years back in time and see if the same people are the same people that are in their lives now that were there 5 years ago before they got into a track of attracting prosperity in their life. And what you'll see is that even though you didn't do anything, you didn't stop talking to them, you didn't stop seeing them, but they slowly, slowly, for some reason, just moved out of your life. Like, it's true. It just happens, and you're like, and then one day you'll sit down, because me and my husband do this all the time. We're like sitting down and be like, yo, whatever happened to, oh, I don't know. He just stopped coming around. Like, you know?
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of meta. It's going to be a lot more. Like, all my books are feminine in quality, because I really believe that what's lacking in the community is the feminine strength. And there's, I'm not going to lie, there's a lot of queens, there's a lot of superwomen, there's a lot of bad, whatever you want to call them. But at the same token, there's a lacking of motherhood, of strength, of taking responsibility for our daughters type of thing that is lacking. And that's what I want to bring into mine. Because I think a lot of women, and I don't know a lot of women personally, but I see a lot of Facebook women, that could be in need of my mom. My mom's coming in and talk. Like, she will backslap you three ways till Tuesday. Like, she's kind of scary. She still scares me. I'm talking really low because she can hear me. I'm afraid she's going to beat me up.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so when is it scheduled to release?
Next year. I want to release it at least by next year, spring. That will be my fourth book release, which is completely scary. And it will be, like, my first book that is not part of the Celine series. So that will be cool, too. And it'll just have a lot of different elements to it. Right now I have it tentatively titled El Femminis Completas, which is Italian for the complete feminine, and it's a series. It's the good food,
okay,
good friends, good sex, and good night, which
mm-hmm.
I think what makes a woman complete is their ability to control and regulate that. I think a lot
mm-hmm.
of good food, bar none, is one of my favorite things because, you know, you are what you eat. Is one of the things
mm-hmm.
that I really am passionate about. When you're
okay.
cooking for somebody or what you're eating from somebody, their energy gets transferred
mm-hmm.
into that, and you get to take it into you when you eat it. So
mm-hmm.
That's why the first one is good food, and then you got good friends because you are who you hang out with continuously,
mm-hmm.
good sex because whoever you take into your body becomes part of you, which is
mm-hmm.
like, one of the things that I really believe in good night, because once you have all of that, your nights and how you dream and everything is part of your life. It regulates the rest of
okay.
your day and your life. So, yeah.
Okay. That sounds like a really interesting series. Excuse me. You have to keep me posted and let me know when it starts, to, you know, when each book releases.
Yeah.
So I can follow you with that. Now, do you have any book signings or events coming up in the near future where readers can come out and meet you?
No, I know I should be having some in Broward coming up soon, but I have so much going on right now because my schedule is like, I took a hiatus from writing for a second because
okay.
I like to
okay.
write what I know, and the Femininas Completas series has a lot of traveling in it. It has a lot of different
okay.
countries and everything. So I've been traveling a lot. I've been fortunate enough to get some people into my life when I was asking for
mm-hmm.
it to come into my life and to be able to bring me to a point that I can travel a lot.
Gotcha.
So I've been
okay.
traveling a lot, going to different countries, meeting different people and getting to know the different cultures, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I hope that will show into my books and the people that's
okay.
reading them. So, but yeah, definitely let you know. You'll be the first person to let you know when the manuscript
okay.
is done so that you can completely hurt my feelings and I can just like ball up into a little corner, cry my eyes off, and then get up and do it again.
Okay.
Because that's what you do as a writer.
Uh-huh.
So writers are crazy. Like, writers are crazy because, you know, you say, punish me. Yes, can I have another one?
Tell our listeners how they can purchase your books and how they can follow you on social media.
You can actually find my books. They're at lunacharles.com, which they're available
mm-hmm.
also. They're available on Amazon, on Kindle, on Barnes & Noble, and they have local stores in Florida that have them. So
okay.
I'm pretty much everywhere. I'm like your Haitian mother watching you do something bad. I'm everywhere.
Okay. Okay, and how can they follow you on social media?
I'm on Instagram, Luna_Charles, on Instagram,
okay.
Twitter, Luna_Charles, and on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
Luna Charles. So, yeah,
okay.
just, you know, I'm the red girl with the really big smile that you're trying to figure out why she's sparkling. Like, seriously, what's wrong with her?
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed this time that we've spent, but we have reached the end of our time here. Thank you so much for joining me today, Luna.
Thank you so
much,
Tamika,
yeah.
for having me.
Yes, my pleasure. We at Say What Book Club and Author Spotlight wish you continued success on your literary journey.
Thank
again,
you.
Listeners, you're welcome. Again, listeners, we have had author Luna Charles with us today. If you missed any part of this interview, you can access the archive about 5 minutes after the show airs to hear it in its entirety. This is Tamika Patrice Kane from Say What Author Spotlight, signing off saying join us here every fourth Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we interview our favorite authors. Until next time, live your purpose, encourage someone to be their daily best, and read a good book. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.